You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hi, this is Rebecca Watson of Skeptic.org, and you are listening to Flopcast, the floppiest podcast on the internet.
Live from Chicken Town, this is the Flopcast episode 518.
On Flopcast.net.
Yes, yes, hello, Cornflake.
Whoa, hey there, Kevin, hi.
And hello once again to Blasted Bill.
Boom shakalaka, I am back.
Bill is back for more flop fighting. We got to finish what we started last week. Things are intense. We are in the midst of battle, 80s vehicle battle. That'll be good, but before we get into the flop fighting, Cornflake, how about National Whatever Day?
With a list of credits far too long for going over in such a short segment like National Whatever Day, and with ties to the Boston area, turning 70 on April 16th is Billy West.
Another William.
Another Billy. That's right. We had Billy D. Williams last week. We have Blasted Bill right here on the show.
It's like I did it on purpose or something.
Billy West.
Voice of Buzz from the Honey Nut Cheerios commercials.
Oh, I miss Honey Nut Cheerios.
I have not had a Honey Nut Cheerio.
Yeah.
I'm going to say since the 80s.
I gave up cereal a while ago, and that's one of the ones I miss.
Voices half the characters on Futurama. I knew him from the Ren and Stimpy show. I was surprised. I didn't realize he had involvement in Doug, and Doug was one of my favorite cartoons on Nickelodeon growing up. But, I mean, he's been in, like, everything.
Yeah, you are not kidding. His credits just go on and on. One of the absolute top guys in voice acting.
Yeah, and not just in cartoons and commercials, but he was on morning radio around the Boston area.
Yeah.
A couple of decades back as well, WBCN. Yeah, he would do some of the funny voices on the Big Mattress Show.
Oh, with Lockwoodera. Sure.
Yeah.
Radio legend here in Boston. That was our morning rock DJ for decades here in Boston, Bill, was Charles Lockwoodera. And yeah, Billy West was part of his crew for a time. And then Billy went to New York City. He was part of the Howard Stern show for quite a while.
So I want to clarify that it was called The Big Mattress Show?
The Big Mattress, yes.
It was just called The Big Mattress, yeah.
Okay. Crazy morning DJ names.
That was our wacky morning show here in Boston. It was good. But yeah, Billy was on Stern for a long time. He does a very good Howard Stern impression as well. I think he does multiple Howard Stern voices. Like, he can do Howard Stern at various stages in Howard's career. Like, he can be that subtle in his impressions. And I've seen him around.
Yeah, we've seen him in person.
Yeah, he comes around to conventions in these parts quite often, probably because it gets him back to, I think he still has family in this area.
Yeah, because he was born in Michigan, but he grew up here.
Oh,
born in Michigan. Hey.
Hey.
Like, I did it on purpose.
Billy West is bringing us all together. Blasted Bill is in Michigan as we speak. Yeah, I was trying to remember if you'd been at any of the shows, Cornflake, where Billy West was. So you did see Billy as well?
Yeah, you pointed him out to me at MegaFest, and he just looked like he was having the time of his life at his little table there.
Yeah, I saw Billy just a couple months ago, because I made a very brief appearance at Northeast Comic Con back in November, and Billy was there again. I have met him briefly once or twice. I know. Well, I went to a thing a few years ago. He was doing a convention, Northeast Comic Con. This was back when, for a while, they were doing Northeast Comic Con out of an abandoned JCPenney department store. Remember that? We secretly held a comic book convention inside an abandoned department store. And that year, Billy was there. And they had a screening of Space Jam, which Billy did a lot of voices for. And Billy went to the screening and spoke, did a Q&A before the screening, which was actually hosted by our friend Ken from TV Guidance Counselor. Do you have any other particular credits or things that you noticed or that you were surprised by looking him up?
Oh, I just was wondering, it's like, where would we hear him today? Because so many of the things that I know Billy West for are out of the 90s.
Oh, yeah. Well, Futurama's coming back, so we'll hear him there again.
Yeah. I think it's great that Futurama's coming back. I'm excited. But if you happen to catch an ad now and again, I guess he's been doing this since the 90s, and I didn't realize this until I was today years old. He's the voice of the red M&M on the M&M commercials.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, he's also one of the stars of Comic Book the Movie, which I don't know if that's available anywhere anymore. It was like a Spinal Tap, like mockumentary-style thing that Mark Hamill made about, this must be like 20 years ago. It's set at San Diego Comic-Con, and Mark cast all these voice people in it, but they're just on screen. They're not doing cartoon voices. It's like Jess Harnell and a bunch of those guys. And then Billy is one of the stars. So if you see a Comic Book the Movie, if you can find it, you can see some rare on-screen acting from Billy West.
Good stuff.
Nice.
Well, happy birthday, Billy.
Yeah.
70 years old.
Every week on the Flopcast, we'll wish another Billy a happy birthday. Let's see how long we can keep this going.
It's the year of Billies.
This will be the year of the Billy.
Heaven help me if I run out of Billies.
Oh, man. Whenever it's Billy Ocean's birthday, we are just going to have quite the party around here. For now, however, let's get back to our flop fight. Remember the flop fight from last
week? Yes. We have business to attend to, and it involves vehicles flop fighting.
This is all Blasted Bill's fault. This was Bill's idea. Last week, Bill said, let's do a flop fight of 80s vehicles. Last week, we did part one. We're back for part two now. So I guess we should say first the winner last week, as all these 80s vehicles from TV shows and movies and cartoons and stuff are doing battle. The final winner of the first eight contestants last week was Airwolf, right?
Yeah.
Kind of crazy.
One of Bill's favorites. Super helicopter of 80s television, Airwolf.
We were trying hard to pick someone else, but Airwolf came through.
We were all rooting for Turbo Teen. Airwolf made it to the finals. So Airwolf is standing by, waiting to learn who wins this week. And then Airwolf will be in the final battle at the end of today's show. That's the plan. But first, we've got to get through a whole bunch more opening rounds. I've got my coffee mugs full of little tiny slips of paper here once again. I have a Lionel Richie mug full of contestants, and I have a Lionel Richie mug full of types of competitions. Identical Lionel Richie mugs. I'm going to try to keep them straight and keep them separate from my third mug, which, of course, contains coffee.
I am so glad that we are putting Lionel Richie to good use for this.
It's me and Lionel over here, the three of us working for a flop fight. I'm reaching into Lionel mug number one, and our first contestant this week is the train from Silver Spoons.
Oh.
So there are going to be trains up in this thing.
Yes, Ed will be very happy, yes.
Ed from Sponge Awareness gave us all kinds of facts and figures about the train from Silver Spoons.
So I only watched a few episodes of Silver Spoons back in the day, but one thing that always stood out was the train and how cool it was and how much I wanted one as a kid.
Oh, yeah, that's really the iconic image of Silver Spoons is either Ricky or his father. Somebody would come riding into the living room on top of that weird little train.
On top of that safety issue known as a train.
Just a train track permanently running through the middle of their living room on that show.
That's not a trip hazard or nothing.
It was incredible. All right, the Silver Spoons train, favorite of ours. Whoop, it just happened. I just reached into my coffee mug full of coffee.
Oh, Sam. Yeah,
that's all right. I stopped myself just in time before there was a coffee explosion.
Extra caffeinated digits.
Yes. Okay, the train from Silver Spoons shall be facing the station wagon from National Lampoon's Vacation.
Oh.
Excellent.
Yes. Now, the question is there a dog tied behind the back?
Oh, there could be a dead old lady strapped to the roof. There's all kinds of possibilities with the vacation car. Chevy Chase behind the wheel. You don't know what's going to happen. That was a wacky vehicle. Classic, like, 1970s giant wood-paneled station wagon.
Yeah.
Probably didn't get very good mileage tearing across the country on the way to Wally World. It's the train versus the station wagon. But now the question is, what are they doing? Because for every competition in a flop fight, it's different. We're going to randomly determine exactly what is the competition. And so, reaching into the second Lionel Richie mug, the competition is... Competition is breakdancing.
Oh!
All right, how's this going to work?
Yeah.
Oh, it's not going to work well, but we're going to love it.
Now, there was a lot more breakdancing on Silver Spoons than in National Lampoon's Vacation. I'm going to say National Lampoon's Vacation had zero breakdancing, whereas...
You're correct. Yep.
Ricky and Alfonso and his friends on Silver Spoons did quite a bit of breakdancing.
But was it the train breakdancing?
The train did not do any breakdancing. However, I still feel like this might be the deciding factor right here. That train was certainly at least witness to breakdancing. You know, sure. Alfonso Ribeiro, he was a no-fooling-around breakdancing kid.
Well, we're going to have a little bit of dissension then, because I'm thinking about the fact that with Chevy Chase behind the wheel, that wood-paneled station wagon could definitely breakdance.
I would also like to point out that the train has to be on a track, whereas breakdancing occurs on a cardboard box. So would the train be able to function on said cardboard box?
The train would go spinning out of control on the cardboard, although it may be sort of breakdancing as it spins out of control.
Yes, yes.
Spinning around was part of breakdancing, certainly. The only dancing I remember involving the car from Vacation was Chevy was sort of dancing around when he was like flirting with Christy Brinkley as they were flying down the highway, you know? So there was a little bit of dancing there.
Yeah, if one of these two vehicles is going to spin, I would think it's going to be the station wagon.
See, I think it would be the train.
It makes it tough, though, because the real breakdancing ties are to the characters in Silver Spoon. Yeah. So I have a really hard time with this one.
This is a tough call, because I agree the car, the station wagon, is out there loose in the world. Seems a little more maneuverable to do some crazy breakdancing stunts with. However, just that Silver Spoon's train is just so steeped in the world of breakdancing, being around Alfonso all the time.
The training's definitely better.
Yeah.
So one more thing I want to point out is, like, even back in the 80s, the station wagon was like the old person car.
Right.
And the train is obviously for kids, and breakdancing is definitely for the youth. So I think it's a close call, but my personal preference is I think it's going to be the train.
The breakdancing Silver Spoons train. Yeah, I think I tend to lean that way as well. Just it's the ties to the breakdancing scene are too strong with Silver Spoons.
I'm in.
Plus, I've never met anybody from Vacation. And you know, I've met Erin Gray many times. I took a Tai Chi class with Erin Gray.
Right.
She was delightful. So we weren't quite breakdancing. It didn't get that intense.
But I think if you just speed Tai Chi up, you get very close to breakdancing.
Yeah, that's the thing is we were going too slow. I kept saying, Erin...
Are you suggesting that Tai Chi is breakdancing in slow motion, Bill?
That is what I am suggesting.
If we could get Alfonso into Aaron's Tai Chi class, he could really breakdanceify that whole thing. All right, the Silver Spoons train is the winner.
I've learned so much from this singular flop fight.
And let's move on. Our next contestant is a time-traveling flying saucer.
Oh,
because I'm talking Fonz and the Happy Days gang.
Ah.
Cupcake!
With Cupcake, yes. This was Fonzie, Richie, and Ralph Malph hop aboard a time-traveling flying saucer with a alien space girl named Cupcake and their little dog, Mr. Cool, and they're traveling through time haphazardly. Like, they can't really control the time-traveling flying saucer, so they don't know what era they're going to land in next. They're trying to get home, I guess. They're trying to get back to, you know, 1950s Milwaukee. It's Fonz and the Happy Days gang.
So my only knowledge of this show comes from the Flopcast.
We have discussed this flying saucer many times around here.
Yes, yes.
It's pretty incredible. They did all those goofy, like, cartoon versions of primetime TV shows back then, you know.
Sure.
Laverne and Shirley had a cartoon, and Mork and Mindy had a cartoon, and Alf had a cartoon. And there were a bunch of them.
And I would watch a bunch of those back in the day, but this was one that was either slight before my time or I did not catch.
Yeah, maybe something else must have been on at the same time that you preferred.
Yeah.
You might have been more of a Smurfs guy.
Oh, definitely.
That's
oh, yeah.
Just a guess. I'm not sure if they were up against the Smurfs, but probably.
And the Snorks.
And the snow. No one's going to stop the snorks. All right. It is the Fonz and the Happy Days Gang Flying Saucer will be facing the Flash Gordon Rocket Cycle.
Nice.
Oh, yeah.
In the movie, Flash Gordon climbs aboard that thing. You kind of stand on it. It's got handles, and off you go. The Rocket Cycle.
So we have another two flying vehicles.
The Queen soundtrack is blasting.
That very epic soundtrack.
Yes.
Okay. I've been on one of these. I've stepped aboard the Flash Gordon Rocket Cycle at Convergence.
Nice.
Yeah, somebody sets up a replica Flash Gordon Rocket Cycle at Convergence sometimes.
It's either not been there when I was there or I missed it somehow.
Yeah, I don't know if it's always there, but sometimes. Yeah. Next time you go.
Because I think I've only been to like 4 Convergences.
Yeah. You and I were there together once.
Yep.
I remember having a delightful lunch at Dairy Queen.
Ah, yes.
They're in a new location now.
Right.
Where there are lunch options other than Dairy Queen. So that's nice.
Yeah.
All right. So this is the Fonz Flying Saucer versus Flash Gordon on his rocket cycle.
Pretty well matched, these two.
I guess it depends on what they're doing. So let's find out the competition. Competition is social media influencer.
Oh.
I know which one I'm picking for this, but I'm eager to hear what you guys think.
So let's see which of these would be better at, making TikTok videos and whatnot.
So I don't think that social media was much of a thing in the Flash Gordon era.
Oh, certainly not. Nobody was on Twitter on the planet Mongo.
But the time traveling vehicle could time travel to a place where it knows about social media. So I think that gives it the slight edge over the rocket.
Yeah, I mean, I can see some cool videos being made with the rocket cycle, with Flash Gordon zipping around on that thing and the hawk people screaming Gordon's alive. And that,
yeah, it's meme worthy for sure.
Yeah, edit that down to an entertaining video or meme. But I can't see Flash Gordon himself on the rocket cycle really actively getting into social media.
Yeah, he doesn't have the stuff of a TikTok star.
Yes, Flash Gordon, kind of a gruff, old-fashioned kind of guy. He's a football quarterback. Meanwhile,
at the helm of the other spaceship,
I think this all comes down to Cupcake.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
Cupcake is the time-traveling space girl flying around with the Happy Days gang, and she seems very social media ready. I think people would adore Cupcake.
100% concur.
I can see Cupcake making some killer videos time traveling around him, and people would love it.
I would love to see her do a makeup one, like where she's doing her makeup while while controlling the spaceship.
You could do a TikTok dance hit in front of the dinosaurs.
Oh, sure.
With Fonz, featuring there, the Fonz.
Yeah. Featuring Fonz, yes.
Oh, yeah, Fonzie can dance. Cue up that Weezer video if you want to see dancing Fonzie.
Yeah, I'm leaning towards the time travelers.
I agree. Okay, the winner is Fonz.
Oh, by a country mile.
Sorry, Flash Gordon. All right, let's move on. Up next, we have, this was requested by Blasted Bill.
Ooh.
When we were setting this thing up. And actually, it was requested by somebody else this week after Flop Fight Part 1 came out.
Nice.
I think it was Drew, our friend Drew from Earth Station DCU.
Okay.
Sent me a message saying, hey, what about Street Hawk? I said, be patient. That was only Part 1. Part 2 still to come. And we have arrived at Street Hawk.
Yes, Street Hawk. A motorcycle stripped down version of Knight Rider. You had Knight Rider, Airwolf, and then Street Hawk, which pretty much the only powers it had was going super fast and having this cool little gun that would pop up in the most ridiculous way.
When you say super fast, it went 300 miles an hour.
Yes.
Which really sounds completely ridiculous.
Right.
That sounds totally unsafe.
I think that's too fast for a motorcycle. But what do I know? I'm not the Street Hawk. What, did they call the guy Street Hawk, or was the motorcycle Street Hawk?
The bike was Street Hawk, or the program was called Street Hawk, but the guy had another name. And I want to say he kind of stole it. But it's been a long time since I watched it, and I never did a rewatch of it. So
yeah, I never watched it. I know the opening. I know the music.
I had a strong suspicion this was one you never watched.
Yeah.
So this came out right at the right time for me. Like, I was a little bit older, I wouldn't have watched the show.
Is this like 87, somewhere
around
there?
Yeah, very late 80s.
Now, Street Hawk, we should say that the guy, the star of Street Hawk, the guy that rode the Knight Rider motorcycle, that was Rex Smith.
Okay.
Who I knew Rex Smith from Solid Gold.
Oh, yeah.
The old music variety show. For part of the run of Solid Gold, the hosts were Marilyn McCoo and Rex Smith.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, he used to be introducing Sheena Easton or whatever every week on Solid Gold. Yeah, that's how I knew Rex Smith. Now, that was pre-Street Hawk. Post-Street Hawk, or possibly mid-Street Hawk, I'm not sure of the timeline, but when they did those Incredible Hulk reunion movies, they did two or three of those, like with Lou Ferrigno and Bill Bixby. After the show ended, they did a couple of TV movies to try to introduce new Marvel characters. Like, they did one with Thor. There's this crazy, wacky version of Thor from an Incredible Hulk TV movie. And they did Daredevil. And Daredevil was Rex Smith.
Okay, all right.
So this guy has been a Marvel superhero also.
Nice.
You know, way before Ben Affleck was Daredevil or Charlie Cox, your original Daredevil was Rex Smith.
Yeah, I can see that.
One more interesting bit of Rex Smith trivia. As we are recording, and in fact, as this show comes out this weekend, there's a music memorabilia convention happening. It's actually the same people that put on the Northeast Comic Con, so very close to Chickentown right now. There's a convention happening, and one of the featured guests is Rex Smith.
Excellent.
Oh, very cool.
We're very close to Street Hawk right now. That is Street Hawk. Who is Street Hawk facing? Let's see. It'll be Street Hawk versus the flying bike from E.T.
Yes, iconic.
So is E.T. in the bike at the time it's flying, I'm assuming?
Absolutely. Otherwise, it's just a bike.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
It's just a bike. So, yeah, you need that wrinkly little weirdo alien riding up in the basket.
Yeah.
Otherwise, what's the point? We need this thing to fly. All right. Street Hawk versus E.T. Now, the Street Hawk motorcycle, that could not fly, could it?
No.
It was strictly land-based, but yikes, it was going 300 miles an hour. So
it was not the Mask motorcycle. The Mask motorcycle would turn into a helicopter.
Oh, Mask, yes. All right. Street Hawk versus E.T. Let's see what the competition is, because this will be the deciding factor. The competition is... Vanna White.
Oh.
Which one would make the better Vanna White?
Either Street Hawk or the flying bike from E.T. has to go into the Wheel of Fortune studio and tap those letters when they light up.
So, yes, you have to be kind of quick to get all those letters tapped. But I think 300 miles is too fast for that. You would end up out of the studio by the time you applied brake. Flying will definitely give you an advantage of flying back and forth and hitting the things. So I'm thinking this goes to the E.T. bike.
If it was a really long phrase and it filled the wall, like the bike could have no problem just rising up to tap those letters.
Right,
the E.T. had that creepy, long, glowing finger and you could reach right out of the basket to tap the letters. That'd be fun.
Yeah. Perfect.
Glow to the glow.
Do you prefer the tapping of the letters versus the old-fashioned turning of the letters?
I miss the turning of the letters.
The turning definitely seemed to give Vanna more of a reason to be there. Because, like, the tapping, it's just like, okay, it already lit up. Why can't you just light it up with the letter? Why does she need to be there?
It's all just like computer screens at this point,
exactly.
Right? They're all just like each letter is like a little monitor or whatever. It clearly requires at this point literally zero human interaction. It's all just it's all for show, obviously.
If Anna ever retires, I'm wondering if they're just going to not replace her and just have no one there.
Yeah, well, I mean, Pat and Vanna are, combined are like 322 years old at this point,
right.
I think.
Yep.
They show no signs of retiring.
And Vanna still looks amazingly good.
A lovely woman to this day, certainly. I have not watched Wheel of Fortune in decades.
Me neither.
So it's one of those things where just every once in a while, like every 3 years, I'll happen to catch 2 seconds of it, and it freaks me out when I see them, like, whoa, look at Pat, look at Vanna. Because suddenly they're 40 years older than I remember them.
Yeah, it does throw you for a bit of a loop.
I watch it if a viral clip comes up of some contestant doing something stupid.
Right, right.
Now that we're talking about it, I kind of miss it.
Well, I think we're all on the same page, it sounds like, as far as we just want to see E.T. in the bike go rising up in the studio and that creepy finger, that creepy alien finger that lights up.
As much as I like Street Hawk, this goes to E.T.
E.T. on the bike is the winner.
It must.
Neil Diamond is going to write a whole new song about this.
Light up the letters.
We have a final opening match left, so I believe there's only two names left in my Lionel Richie mug number one. The first one I'm drawing out is... All right, this is a weird one. This is from Howard the Duck.
Oh.
From the Howard the Duck movie.
Oh.
Towards the end of the movie, it's Howard and Phil, played by Tim Robbins. They climb into an ultralight aircraft.
Ah.
And they take off. There's a wacky chase scene. It's an alien duck, and it's the dude from Shawshank Redemption in an ultralight aircraft.
Alrighty.
In one of the strangest movies ever made.
So I had heard terrible, terrible, horrible things about Howard the Duck as a child when it came out. And
yes.
I'm like, I want to see this horrible, horrible movie. And eventually I was able to get on VHS or something. I don't know what it was. And was expecting a terrible, terrible, horrible movie. And I liked it. I generally liked it a lot. And I don't understand the hate.
It's delightful. It's fun. It's wacky.
Sure. I'll give you that. But it's still a good movie, in my opinion.
It's its own thing. And it's also like there are like hardcore old school Howard the Duck comic book fans who despise the movie because it was so different
right.
from the true.
And I can understand from that perspective.
Sure,
but
I get that.
I had no clue who Howard the Duck was in terms of comics at all. So I had no preconceptions. To me, that is what Howard the Duck is.
And we've talked about this movie a bit on the show. I've defended this movie.
Yes.
Sci-Fi Court.
Classic Sci-Fi Court. That was the very first time we did a Sci-Fi Court at Dragon Con. I defended Howard.
I was all about your defense.
Yes. So it's the Howard the Duck ultralight airplane facing the final contestant. This is it.
Such suspense.
Oh, Cornflake's going to like this one.
Lay it on me.
From the Facts of Life, it's Beverly Ann's Winnebago.
Oh, yes!
Of course, part of Flopcast history was when we were discussing Facts of Life, early last year, just about a year ago.
My most standout memory of Facts of Life.
We're discussing the changing of the guard when Cloris Leachman came in to replace Charlotte Ray. Because, you know, the Facts of Life girls, well, they're in their early 20s. They need an elderly woman looking after them still, of course.
So, it was the early 80s.
Mrs. Garrett leaves town. They bring in her sister, Beverly Ann. And Cornflake immediately said, oh, yeah, and Beverly Ann was in her Winnebago.
Yep.
And I was like, what? I had no memory of this whatsoever. Then, of course, after the show, I pop in my DVD. And, of course, Cornflake's absolutely right. The whole episode is about Beverly Ann in her Winnebago. She is indeed in a giant, and like the whole climactic scene happens. Everybody's packed into Beverly Ann's Winnebago. Didn't they almost drop off a cliff?
Yep.
Yeah. She parked the Winnebago right on the edge of a cliff, like she was in a Roadrunner cartoon.
So I didn't watch much of Facts of Life. I watched a couple episodes, but even I... And this might be a fake memory. Human memories are weird. But even I remembered the Winnebago when Cornflake was talking about it.
Everybody knew the Winnebago except me. But that's
it's
fine.
It's crazy to the extent that you know Facts of Life.
Well, now I know it and I love it. But I also love Howard the Duck. It's Howard in his ultralight plane versus Beverly Ann in the Winnebago with the Facts of Life girls. Let's see what they're doing.
Now we're going to see whether size really matters.
The competition this time is... playing tic-tac-toe against a chicken.
It's
one of those old-timey carnival games back in the day. They would have like a booth set up with an actual chicken playing tic-tac-toe. Like you'd pay your money and then you would get to play tic-tac-toe against a chicken.
So the question is if Howard the Duck, being a intelligent duck, has a better or worse chance of beating another bird.
Yeah, Howard is a bird. Just barely. I mean, even in the ultralight flying scene, they point out that Howard can't fly.
Mm-hmm.
And after the plane crashes into the water, then Howard announces, oh, by the way, I can't swim.
Wow.
Yeah, I think Tim Robbins had to haul him out of the water.
Only a bird on a technicality.
Well, yeah, he comes from that weird dimension, you know, from yep. Duck World, where they essentially are just living like people, but they just happen to be freaky ducks. So, yeah, he would be facing off against the chicken. It would be duck versus chicken. That is interesting. Beverly Ann in the Winnebago. Oh. How do we apply that to tic-tac-toe?
So, Winnebagos are much used for camping. I see many times in camping grounds you have the big giant tic-tac-toes where you play as a group. So that might be an advantage because the Winnebago, being a camping experienced person, might already know about tic-tac-toe strategies.
You know what I've seen at campgrounds are the tic-tac-toe boards where you have all the bean bags and you hit the tic-tac-toe board with the bean bag and it spins to be on an X or an O.
You know, that's actually what I'm thinking of. What I was mixing up with was checkers.
Well, you two have spent a lot more time playing tic-tac-toe at campgrounds than I have.
I never played at tic-tac-toe at campgrounds.
Oh, I can tell you stories, Kevin.
I would be riding my BMX bike all over the campground.
There you go, like Nicole Kidman. This is a tough one.
Yeah, I wish I had strong leanings one way or another on this one, but I don't.
The question is, are we giving the edge to Howard being a bird like the chicken, or is it Beverly with her camping gear? I guess we also have to consider just pure game strategy. Like, how would Howard the Duck fare against intellectual capacity of a chicken? I don't know that Howard would even be very good at tic-tac-toe.
Yeah, I was just going to say, do we have any evidence that he likes games whatsoever?
I don't think we do. I mean, Beverly, we're talking Cloris Leachman, who has such history, you know.
Ah, you know, Cloris Leachman has been on Hollywood Squares.
Ah.
I think that settles it right there. All right, case closed. Nicely done, Cornflake. Pulling out the Hollywood Squares reference. All right, if Cloris played any Hollywood Squares, all right, it's all over. Howard doesn't stand a chance. Howard is out. The Winnebago advances, and that means we are all done with our opening rounds. Moving on to the next round, that means it's the train from Silver Spoons versus the time-traveling flying saucer from Fonz and the Happy Days Gang.
All right.
Now this is a match I'm excited about.
This time, the competition. Competition is librarian.
Which would make the better librarian, you ask?
Yeah, okay.
So a librarian, you usually see like pushing those carts to the back of the books to restack all the books. The train would certainly be able to accommodate lots of books to be able to return them.
Yes. Now, meanwhile, the first thing I thought of was time-traveling flying saucer could gather, you know, sources from throughout history. The reference material that Cupcake and Fonzie would have access to would be staggering.
I'm also thinking about the computer panel within the spaceship and how it would handle the Dewey Decimal System versus a train.
Sure. It definitely has the technology on its side.
I just wanted to say Dewey Decimal.
Yeah, and I feel like I'm thinking of Silver Spoons. I don't remember very many books being around that house.
Yeah.
It was just, you know, Pac-Man machines.
Yeah, it certainly doesn't have much cause to be around books, so
yeah.
The time-traveling saucer definitely has more experience with history, which history, you have more books.
I remember glasses with windshield wipers.
They were breakdancing, they were riding trains. Yeah, it was all novelty toys and games. No reading in that house.
Yeah, yeah. I think you've swayed me to the time-traveling saucer side.
Okay, so we're knocking Silver Spoons out, and the Fonzie...
Cupcake takes it.
Cupcake is still in this with Ralph Malph and Mr. Cool.
Mr. Cool the dog.
And Richie and Fonzie. All right, that means we're moving on to E.T. in the Flying Bicycle versus Beverly Ann and the Winnebago.
What a match.
This just keeps getting goofier. The competition this time is miniature golf.
Uh-huh.
Oh, nice. Thinking fast, I can give you a list of things that you do not want to see on a miniature golf course.
Okay.
And a Winnebago is pretty high up on that list. I'm just picturing how that, you know, poor windmill at hole 17 is going to hold up against a Winnebago.
Oh, never mind the windmill. I was thinking about the other golfers. I mean, she almost drove that thing over a cliff.
It's true.
How many poor mini golf players is she going to take out?
Yeah, the bike from E.T. would definitely have far more maneuverability on a miniature golf.
Sure.
And Minishing Off is, you know, very frequented by kids. So I'm sure the Elliot would have much more knowledge of miniature golf.
And that, like, could E.T. use his powers to manipulate the golf ball?
Yes, absolutely. Of course.
Absolutely.
Well.
Yeah, I think this goes to E.T. and the bike.
Yeah, I think so. I hate to see our Facts of Life representative get knocked out. But mini golf, I think we've got to give to the bike with the alien. Okay, E.T. advances on the flying bike, which means that we are at E.T. still facing Fonzie and Cupcake and the Happy Days gang in that flying saucer. It's flying saucer versus flying bike.
Ah!
May the best flying thing win.
Let's see what they are doing.
Oh, so no matter what, the ending competition is going to be flying versus flying.
Airwolf is standing by, yes. We are down to all flying vehicles at this point. The competition this time is Dracula. Dracula, of course, also a flying creature. So they got the flying part down. But now, again, we got to figure out, are they fighting Dracula or are they going to be Dracula?
They're going to be Dracula.
They're going to be Dracula. Cornflake has decided. Okay, yes.
So E.T. still definitely has, like, the creepy, you know, make people do what he wants kind of thing going on, I would feel.
Yeah, E.T. is creepy.
but he doesn't really drink blood. They're vegetarian, aren't they?
That we know of.
Unlike Ralph Malph, E.T. doesn't drink blood. Good point. Unlike those bloodthirsty Happy Days gang.
But E.T. does hide from daylight, so he's not seen, right?
He did seem to be something of a creature of the night. They usually try to keep him hidden during the daytime.
Yes. And even the bike scene has famously is shot in front of the moon.
You know, if Potsy was on this cartoon, he was not. It was Fonzie, Richie, and Ralph were the Happy Days characters on the cartoon. If Potsy was there, I think I would automatically hand this victory to the Happy Days gang because Potsy sang a whole song about blood on Happy Days once.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay.
Like, he was trying to study for a science test, and the only way that he could learn was by memorizing song lyrics.
Ah.
And so he wrote and performed an entire song about the human circulatory system called Pump Your Blood.
That sounds like exactly the kind of thing I would have done in school.
I want to pump your blood.
So if Potsy was here, I think I'd hand it to the Happy Days gang. But
Potsy's not part of that coup.
Yeah.
No Potsy. Anson Williams wanted no part of this cartoon.
So would Fonzie be okay with being a Dracula? If Fonzie got bitten, would it even affect him?
Yeah, he might be too cool to be vampirized.
Yeah, way too cool for that is what I was thinking.
Yeah, the fangs could not pierce that leather jacket.
Hey!
Meanwhile, you feel like E.T. could just totally go vampire with no problem?
I don't know. I mean, he's got a lot going for him, but...
Well, yeah, I mean, he's creepy and he flies around at night already. We got that part down.
Yep.
I keep coming back to the part where I'm pretty sure that his home planet, they were vegetarians, but I'm not 100% sure on that.
Yeah, well, E.T. was a botanist.
Maybe that's what I'm confusing with.
Yeah, he was collecting plant samples when they landed on Earth.
Okay.
It wasn't made perfectly clear in the movie. If you just watch the movie, you might not realize that he actually was a botanist. But if you're one of the weirdos who read the novelization of E.T., such as, say, me, in the book, they actually refer to E.T. as the old botanist.
Ah. So he's old then?
Yes. Oh, look at him.
So, and Dracula's old too, right?
Yes.
Absolutely. You're practically eternal once you go vampire.
Yeah. So I think you've just switched me to Team E.T. I think he's got all of it going for him, and I think Fonzie just couldn't be turned.
I like how throughout this competition, we seem to be voting against our favorites. We're all really staying pure to the game. I much prefer the Happy Days gang to E.T., but yeah, I feel like the competition is Dracula. We got to go E.T. on the bike. It'll be a little weird to have Dracula on a bike, but that's okay. We like weird.
Bikes can still get through windows.
This is the kind of journalism that our fans tune in for, so we've got to stay true to it.
Well, that means, kids, it's going to be E.T. on the flying bike versus Airwolf.
Ooh.
This is our final round. This shall determine
the big rumble.
The final winner of the 80s vehicle flop fight shall be determined right now. And let's see what in the world they're doing. The competition is beekeeper.
Do we give it to our botanist?
I was just going to say, him being a botanist, he already knows how to care for things. And yes, bees are an animal, but you still have to give dedication and care just like you do a plant. And that could easily translate to beekeeping.
E.T. seems to be more in touch with nature than Airwolf, I would think.
Yes.
Because Airwolf, like, you get close to the hive with the downdraft of the propellers, and it's just going to scare all the bees away.
Yeah, it seems like a helicopter in the world of beekeeping may not mix very well.
Yeah.
Whereas the bike, the flying bike, can gently approach the beehive.
The bike has no, like, visible mode of propulsion.
It's just all magic alien power.
So, as much as one-sided battle this is, I think it's E.T. all the way.
Yeah, this seems like an easy victory. Usually we struggle in these final rounds, these final matchups, but in this case, and yeah, Airwolf, man, Airwolf stomped through all the competition last week. As a reminder, the Airwolf helicopter first defeated the A-Team van at winemaking.
Yep.
And that's a hard victory there.
Then defeated the Tron light cycles at bird watching, and then defeated Turboteen at searching for Bigfoot. That was Airwolf's path to the finals.
Such versatility.
Meanwhile, E.T., of course, just now, E.T. was the superior Vanna White over Street Hawk. Then E.T. beat the Winnebago at mini golf. Then beat Fonzie at being Dracula. And now here we are. E.T. on the bike is your winner over Airwolf at beekeeping. So congratulations to E.T.'s flying bike, the very surprising winner of our 80s vehicle flop fight.
This flop fight, though, has been full of surprises.
Even by flop fight standards, yeah, this was a weird one.
You're welcome.
All right, well, hey, great job, everybody.
Yes.
Thank you. You think?
Got through a flop fight. We do have more of these in the planning stages.
Well, thank you for letting me be here for this one.
Oh, yikes. Bill, what a great idea, and great to have you back on the show. Hope you can come back again before too long. Let's not wait another year.
Yeah, let's have you back soon, Bill.
That sounds like a plan to me.
Yes, we've been bad about having guests on. I think you're our first guest of the year.
Nice.
We got to step it up. We need more guests. But meanwhile, should we plug? Didn't you have a convention appearance coming up, right?
Oh, yeah. So I'm going to be at the PenguinCon coming up. It's April 22nd, 23rd, 24th. PenguinCon in Southfield, Michigan. PenguinCon.org. I'm running only one panel, but I'm also running a room party. I think I'm having the only room party at PenguinCon.
Oh, wow.
Normally there's five or six really big room parties, and I think it's only me.
Wow. So if you want a party, you better go see Blasted Bill.
So we're probably going to have to limit the number of people. The theme of the party is Superhero Lounge.
Oh, fun.
Oh.
Yes.
Like, as in what they had on The Tick?
That was kind of my inspiration, yes.
Cool.
Yes.
Nice. And then what is the panel that you're running?
Oh, yeah. So the panel I'm running is the Sci-Fi Vehicle Showdown, a land-based this time, which was kind of the inspiration for this flop fight.
Yeah, that sounds familiar. So you've been here all this time just in training for your PenguinCon panel.
Exactly.
Nice.
So I did another one. I believe it was 2018. I did at PenguinCon, I did the Sci-Fi Vehicle Showdown air-based, and we were supposed to do land-based, but Mikey Mason wanted to be a judge, and he insisted that the Serenity be involved, so we switched to air-based.
All right. Got to keep Mikey happy.
Yes. He was awesome on the panel. It was lots of fun.
Yeah. Mikey's great. Cool. All right. Well, hey, Michigan people, go to PenguinCon, go to Bill's party, and go to Bill's panel. You can be part of a vehicle tournament just like the one that we just had here today on the Flopcast. But for now, meanwhile, Cornflake, how about wrapping up the show? Get us out of here.
Let's do that. Well, we are at flopcast.net. That's our website. We're also on facebook.com/flopcast. On Twitter, our handle is @flopcast. And we're on Instagram, the_flopcast. We have the suggestion for all of our listeners. We would love it if you head on over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a rating and or a review. Music for the Flopcast is written and performed by the Sponge Awareness Foundation.
Sponge Awareness, the preferred music for all breakdancing activity with Alfonso and Ricky and Aaron Gray and the Train on Silver Spoons. They listen to nothing but Sponge Awareness. That is a true fact. Don't go back and watch the show and check. Cornflake, thanks for another fine Flopcast. Bill, thanks again for joining us for some flop fighting for the last couple of weeks. This was really fun.
Yes, thank you.
And everybody, thanks for hanging out with us. Meanwhile, of course, be safe, be kind, be silly. And we'll see you next week.
Peace and cookies.
In the Cosmic Pizza Podcast, your pizza delivery guys, Dan, Sean, and Paul, serve you a slice of life. We talk to women in comedy, voice actors, film directors and producers, authors. We also talk about conspiracy theories, The Muppets, our top three films of the decades, famous people we confuse with each other, and our favourite stand-up comedians. We have recast Star Trek The Original Series and Babylon 5, and created our alternative superheroes. But most of all, we have had so much fun doing it every 2 weeks.
2 weeks?
Cosmic Pizza Podcast is not about the cosmos or about pizza.
Okay, it's the secret after show. Bill is still here with us. Hey, Bill.
Hello.
Bill, as a Michigan person, last time you were on the show, last year, we just made the whole show about Michigan. We were so fascinated by by your home state of Michigan. I just have one Michigan thing I wanted to bring up, so I saved it.
Okay.
Saved it for the after show. I just learned just this year of a thing called Detroit-style pizza.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Are you familiar with this? You sound like you are.
Oh, very much so. Yes. Oh, yeah.
Detroit pizza. I was not aware of this. And there's a place here in Massachusetts that makes Detroit-style pizza now. I have no idea how it matches up to, you know, actual Detroit-based Detroit pizza, but they claim it's Detroit-style pizza.
Okay.
And it's fantastic. We got it a few weeks ago. We loved it. How would you describe Detroit pizza?
Well, first let me ask you, what was the name of the restaurant? Is it like a national chain or is it a local chain?
I don't know if this is a chain or just a single place, but the place I went to was called the Square Manufacturing Company.
I love it. Okay. And that perfectly describes Detroit pizza, I would say.
Yeah.
Because, yes, Detroit pizza, it is a rectangular-shaped pizza, not a round-shaped pizza, and you cut it into squares. It's a little bit of a thicker crust. You might say deep dish, but it's not like the downtown Chicago, like, thick pizza. It just has a thick dough to it.
Right.
I think the original Detroit pizza was Buddy's, if I'm remembering correctly. So the two big ones here in Michigan are Buddy's Pizza and Shields Pizza, and they're the progenitors of the Detroit style.
As the story goes, based on the website for this Massachusetts-based Detroit pizza pie, it says it started in the 1940s in Detroit, and they were cooking pizza dough in an auto parts tray.
Oh, that makes perfect sense, yeah.
They claim that's how it started, because, yeah, it is like a rectangular tray with like high sides on it.
Yeah, you don't really have a crust per se.
Right. Yeah, everything goes right up to the edge.
Yeah, that's funny because we just got a Detroit style pizza place in town where I live too, and that's how they do it.
Nice.
You've had this too, Cornflake.
Yeah, delicious.
All right, well, that's what I wanted to check with you about, is you, so you can confirm this is a real thing from actual Detroit.
Oh, yeah.
This wasn't just a crazy thing that they made up here in Massachusetts.
Nope.
Well, there you go, everybody. Whether you're in Michigan or right here in Chickentown, yeah, go get yourself some Detroit pizza. Tell them the Flopcast sent you for 20% off your order. They're not going to know what you're talking about when you get there.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping at the TeePublic store, which can all be found at ESONetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.